Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free. My name is America.
We have a real treat today. You know, my hot button is education, because I believe that without a proper education, we are not providing our children anything that will help them for their future. And as a result of that, I have with me today a friend who has done a tremendous amount of research on education and rights for magazines all over the internet. You've probably seen him on a lot of podcasts and maybe been lucky enough to go to one of his seminars. Alex Newman, thank you so much for joining me today. And thank you for all of the work and research that you're doing with regard to our children. I appreciate everything. Alex, you wrote a fabulous article in the New American, and I suggest that I'm going to have Alex tell you all the places that he sends his articles to, but you should really all, everyone, look at the New American. And in this article, you were talking about rescuing our children, and you made a fabulous statement that I would like you to explain to everyone, because sometimes we use words that people really don't quite get the understanding of. And it said that when you were talking about the National Department of Education, there was a quote that said, "These studies will be revolutionized, being cleansed of religion, patriotic, and other features of the bourgeois ideology. The students will be taught on the basis of Marxian dialectic, materialism, internationalism, and the ethics of the new socialist society." Alex, can you explain that for everyone? Because I don't think people really know what's going on in school. And this is our government schools.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about this, Karen. It's become my passion in recent years to expose what's going on in the government schools, because I think that is the ultimate secret weapon of the totalitarians who want to overthrow our system of government, who want to overthrow our culture, our civilization, our churches, our synagogues, our freedoms, and replace them with the Soviet model. And that quote you mentioned, I actually included that in the introductory article to the whole special report we did on rescuing our children. We did a whole special issue. That introduction was called Rescuing Our Children. And that quote actually comes from William Z. Foster. And he was the head of the Communist Party. And he was talking about what the new Soviet American government would do with education once it took over. And this was, you know, many, many generations ago. And yet, when you look at what's going on in the public schools today, it's like word for word what he called for. Create a national department of education and centralize control of the education system and use it to propagandize the children against historic America, against our individual freedoms and our Constitution. And, you know, they put it in other terms, right? You get rid of religion and patriotism and all the rest of it. And they've done it. I mean, they've absolutely done it. President Donald Trump, I think, hit the nail on the head when he was speaking during his 4th of July speech at the Mount Rushmore. He said the reason for the mayhem in our streets is that our children are being indoctrinated to hate their own nation in our biased public schools. And I mean, I couldn't have said it better myself. It's exactly what's happened. They have brainwashed our children. And so the communists have been working on this for a very long time, and unfortunately they've been incredibly successful.
Well, I thought, wait a minute, Alex, education is not in our Constitution. Therefore, education should be a state issue. Where did this National Department of Education come from that's dictating how we should be educating our children?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There is not a word about education in the U.S. Constitution, which by definition then means it's a power reserved to the states. And just in case that wasn't clear enough to everybody reading it, the founders actually went back and put in the 10th Amendment just to make it crystal clear, no wiggle room. Any powers not delegated to the United States are reserved for the states or the people. In other words, education, in a worst case, should be a state responsibility. I would argue it should be a local responsibility, but really even beyond that, a parent responsibility. The idea that the government ought to be educating our children, I think, was one of the big mistakes we made as Americans. And if you go back and look at the history of how the government school system was born, what you'll find is that to a man, I mean, if you don't include, you know, the Pilgrims and the Puritans and Massachusetts, who set up kind of town schools where parents would get together and hire a teacher for the specific purpose of making sure their children knew the Bible. And then we had, of course, Thomas Jefferson was also an advocate of local parents getting together and hiring a teacher to teach their children. But, you know, what we have today is just like a difference between night and day. But very powerful totalitarian forces wanted to create a national system of education. And I've actually traced the history back. We do it in the special report in The New American called Rescuing Our Children that people can get at thenewamerican.com/rescuingourchildren. You can get it in PDF, or you can order 100 copies of the print magazine. We've encouraged people now. We're hoping to get 1 million copies out this way. So we've been encouraging people to do that. You know, get a copy, read it. And if you agree that this is maybe the most crucial issue that we're facing, help us get the word out. But for really clear back to the first guy who openly proposed the type of system we have today, it was a communist by the name of Robert Owen, who had set up this communist commune in Indiana called New Harmony. We know from a whistleblower who was part of his operation, a gentleman by the name of Orestes Brownson, and he wrote a book exposing everything. He actually found God and rejected this evil that he had been involved in, and then blew the whistle. And what he exposed was that this guy, Robert Owen, an actual communist, even before Karl Marx came along, who believed that the government ought to take over the education of children, and he set up what was described by this whistleblower as a secret society modeled on the Carbonari of Europe. And he said that the objective was to get men elected to the legislatures who would support having the government take over the school system, and then also to shift public opinion in favor of taking the responsibility of education away from parents and away from churches and handing it to the state. And one of the things he said, Karen, was that the objective was to eventually form a system of national public schools that would be controlled by the national government and that would be used to completely exclude religion from education and from American society. Fast forward a couple hundred years, and here we are. They've succeeded. And all the crucial people along the way, if you look at Horace Mann, if you look at John Dewey, they were instrumental. And then, of course, it was Jimmy Carter who formalized the creation of the National Department of Education. He made a campaign promise to the unions, the National Education Association, which for decades had been lobbying to create a federal cabinet-level Department of Education. And it's all been downhill from there, unfortunately, Karen.
You're absolutely right, and they set up the National Department of Education and then wrote the code of how this was going to be handled and went against their own code, because in the code of what the National Association was supposed to do was never get involved in curricula. And lo and behold, we have learned that whenever the communists say something, think the opposite. And that's what's going on right now. Believing that our children are a one-size-fits-all for education, I believe, has created the huge downfall that we see in the illiterate children that are graduating and then can't read and write and do simple math. One size shoe fits all. There is no person that is identical to someone else. We all have the same opportunity, but we are not identical. And to think that we can fill a child's head with the same thing for everyone, to me, ensures the fact that our children are going to go out and do something to get themselves noticed, because nobody likes to be the same as everyone else. Everyone has an inherent purpose of succeeding and being the best that they can be, and I believe that that's being squashed in our schools. What would you think of that?
It absolutely is, Karen. I almost feel like that's the main purpose. And again, if you go back to the creators of the public school system, you know, John Dewey is often thought of as the founding father of the modern progressive so-called government education system. And I would say so-called education system because it really doesn't do that anymore. In fact, it handicaps children and almost prevents them from getting a real education. But I think they did this really deliberately. You know, Horace Mann, we can probably excuse. He's the one who first brought in the whole word method of teaching reading. And, that, you know, you could
disaster.
Say it was. It was a total disaster. It resulted in massive illiteracy. And within a couple of years, all the schoolmasters in Boston got together and they wrote this brilliant essay. And they said, look, Mr. Mann, you know, sorry, but this doesn't work. You know, this is not how children learn how to read. You know, you don't memorize words. In fact, you have to teach the sound that the letters make. Otherwise, children won't be able to decipher the words. So they were very respectful and they were very toned down. But they said very clearly, sorry, Horace, man, this does not work. We're not going to do it anymore. And that was the end of it. But then John Dewey, knowing full well what had already been exposed back in 1844, resurrected this quackery. He actually tried it out in an experimental school that was funded by the Rockefellers and surprised the kids who graduated from that school. The kids who were taught using this quackery were unable to read properly. And you know, John Dewey went on and made that basically the centerpiece of his educational reforms. Now, his educational reforms were huge. They were very broad. They dealt with a lot of areas. But John Dewey focused like a laser beam on promoting this quack form of teaching reading.
It is almost impossible to learn to read using that ideology, because what the child is focusing on is the letters and the positioning of the letters, and what they're supposed to do is recognize the word not from how the words sound, but what the word looks like.
That's exactly right. Exactly. We have a phonetic writing system. And so, of course, the children need to be able to know what sounds the letters make and then how to blend those together. It's unconscionable that they've done this. And then if you look at under Common Core, which is part of the National Education Program, it was formalized under Barack Obama. They force kindergarten children to memorize sight words, even though, again, we've known since the 1840s that this doesn't work, that this is harmful. Today we have brain scans. There's a doctor over in France, Dr. Stanislas Dahane, who's been doing brain scans on children who've been exposed to the quackery versus those who've been educated the correct way. What he found is that you can actually see the physical damage in the brains of these children who've been exposed to the whole word method of teaching reading. It's a crime against children of massive proportions. And, you know, it goes back to the point, you know, these schools are not educating children. In fact, they're handicapping children. They're brainwashing them with climate change, with gender theory, with the LGBT agenda, with the religion of secular humanism. But when it comes to actually educating them, teaching them facts, teaching them how to think, teaching them how to reason, how to think logically and critically, nothing. I mean, absolutely nothing.
No, you're... Alex, absolutely 100% correct. And maybe people don't realize the damage that sight words do, because everything that the left does is based on emotional learning. So they will, for example, listen to a speech of the president and pick apart his words, not his actions. And they will focus on maybe his tie was crooked or his hair wasn't straight. And then that becomes the focus, because they have been trained to look at things visually and not look at things logically. And this is what our schools are doing. And we all know that when you teach to only one side of the brain, which is what they're doing, they're teaching to the visual side of the brain and not the logic, reason, and critical thinking. And sometimes when you close that door, it's almost impossible to get it opened again. And that's what we see happening. Do you believe that what's going on in school, we are seeing the result of today in their actions?
Absolutely. I think that's really the primary explanation. The reason that we see all these young people, and if you look at the polling data, Karen, it paints an even clearer picture. Just to give you some examples, 70% of my generation, millennials, these are people who are under the age of, 38, between the ages of like 20 and 38, more or less, describe themselves as socialists. So in another generation, these are going to be the decision makers. These are going to be the CEOs. These are going to be the politicians. These are going to be the governors and the president. And yet they are overwhelmingly self-described socialists. If you look at the religious data too, it paints a very, very alarming picture. Let me give you an example. For the first time in all of American history, Christians will be a minority in this country. Among millennials, that's already the case. Less than 50% of millennials describe themselves as Christian, whereas just a few decades ago, it was up at like 93, 94% of Americans described themselves as Christians. So we've had this enormous, enormous shift. And it goes even deeper than that. They asked millennials about their belief in God, and only 50%, you know, not specific doctrine, sects, religions, or whatever, just their belief in a general God. And only 50% of millennials said they were quite confident that God existed. This takes a lot of brainwashing, Karen. When you put all this together, you see that my generation and then the one after us, Generation Z, they're so brainwashed. There's no way they will be capable of sustaining our free political institutions, our civilization. Right now, we are on the highway to Cuba, to Venezuela, to North Korea, to Vietnam, to China, to the Soviet Union. We've seen where this leads. And unfortunately, America is heading over the cliff, just like all those nations. It took a lot longer here because we had good foundations. They couldn't just, you know, have a revolution in the street. They had to brainwash several generations of children. But I think that is the primary cause. And until we recognize that, Karen, I don't know how we're going to get ourselves out of this mess.
I agree with you, and that's why I am so happy to have you as a friend and to know that you're doing all of this and exposing all of this, and there are actually groups of people like yourself who are exposing what's going on in the school. I actually think that this COVID, this CCP virus, or the China plague, as the president calls it, is a blessing in disguise because it opened the door and hopefully opened the eyes to many parents of what their children are actually learning. Alex, you wrote a book on the deep state, and we only have a couple of minutes left, but can you just we'll talk about the deep state in more depth, but can you talk about what is really the deep state? Because I think when people hear that, they kind of gloss over and don't believe it.
Yeah, well, you know, the polling data on the deep state is very interesting. According to the Monmouth University Polling Institute now, the overwhelming majority of Americans recognize that we have something nefarious going on. You know, they defined a deep state as a group of government and military officials who are secretly trying to direct national policy behind the scenes. And, you know, that's progress that the overwhelming majority of Americans, something like 74, 75% of Americans recognize that. Unfortunately, they're not thinking nearly deep enough, right? Yes, we do have rogue bureaucrats. We do have bureaucracies that are entrenched in their ways. We do have the intelligence community and the military-industrial complex that are really out of control, that really do believe that they're superior to us and they have this divine right to rule over us for our own good. But the deep state goes so much deeper than that, and that's really the main takeaway from my book. You know, when you look at these deep state swamp creatures in Washington, D.C., you're just looking at the tip of the iceberg. You need to look what's behind the scenes. You need to look at organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg, the Trilateral Commission. You've got to look at the secretive organizations like the Skull and Bones Society at Yale. You've got to look at the Bohemian Grove. And then you need to know how they operate. And so the second section of the book deals with the way they work. You know, what kind of policies do they pursue? How do they pursue it? What kind of lies do they use to deceive us? How are they using this COVID virus to steal our freedom? How are they funding and controlling these riots in an effort to bring about fundamental change to our society? So I break all that down, and then I conclude with a call to action, giving people my thoughts on how we can best resist this. And that starts with getting educated ourselves and then educating others.
Well, thank you, Alex, and thank you so much for writing that book. And where can people find it?
It will be available on Amazon very, very soon, and otherwise it's available at the New American's website, thenewamerican.com.
My fellow Americans, you've watched for decades as radical Marxists have systematically taken over some of our nation's most cherished institutions. And like us, we're pretty sure you're not happy about any of it. But this is the America we now find ourselves in. AmericaOutloud.com is fighting back with one of the fastest growing conservative media networks in the world. features some of the nation's most influential experts and commentators. It is a fight for the soul of humanity. America Out Loud Talk Radio is the voice of liberty and justice for all.
And Alex, can you please tell everyone where they can find some of your fabulous writing? And folks, please, if you have any concept of what's going on in your school, please go and read some of Alex's articles. They are incredible. Alex, where can everybody find you?
Thank you so much, Karen. So I work with and for a lot of different clients. I'm the senior editor at The New American. I'm a contributor to the Epoch Times. I've been writing a series on education there. Now I'm on part 18, doing some investigative reporting on communist China. I also have my own personal website. It's at libertysentinel.org. That's libertysentinel, S-E-N-T-I-N-E-L.org. And I write for the Illinois Family Institute. I write for the Law Enforcement Intelligence Brief, which goes out to every police chief and sheriff in this country. You know, we recognize that they were getting garbage intelligence, if anything at all, from the feds. And thanks to courts and left-wing activists, a lot of our police departments have had their intelligence operations just completely neutralized, even when we have communist revolutionaries out in the streets burning down our cities, terrorizing communities, burning down minority businesses, attacking police. So we kind of stepped in to fill that void and get accurate and useful intelligence to our law enforcement executives, especially our sheriffs and our police chiefs. And that's kind of a sample of what I do. I also write for WND and a lot of different publications when time permits. And people, if you go to any search engine that's reasonable and reliable, and I exclude Google very deliberately from there, you'll be able to find a lot of my stuff. So.
That would, yes, exclude Google, everyone. One of the best ways to stop what's going on is to stop using the tools that are making it happen. And that's something that we should all be learning. Remember, there was a life before the internet. We actually picked up the phone and spoke to people. Oh, my goodness. A relationship was in development. And that's really what communists try to do. They must eliminate relationships. That's why they, I believe, love those masks. Alex, you made mention of China. Do you think that the Chinese are influencing our education at all?
It's a fact that they are. It's you know, no question about it. You look at, for example, these Confucius Institutes. They've got them all over the country. These are basically little communist Chinese propaganda centers. And they say, oh, we're teaching children about Chinese civilization. No, you're not. The Chinese communists absolutely destroyed the remnants of Chinese civilization. They burned the libraries. They slaughtered the professors who knew about it. They took down the statues. They burned the beautiful buildings and architecture. You know, this is not about Chinese culture. This is about communist culture. And that's really just the start of it. If you look, there's more and more, not just sympathy, but overt support for Maoism and for communism and for communist China in the institutions in Washington, D.C., in the cabinet departments. The U.S. Department of Education is probably among the worst of the worst. And what you find is that many of the ideas and the ideologies that are now being spread by our education system are exactly the same trash that was used to overthrow China and to enslave that great nation under the communists and other nations as well. Now, there's slight variations on it. They knew that having a class warfare in the United States was a little bit more difficult since poor people here are typically wealthier than wealthy people and certainly middle class people in other countries. So they had to try a different approach. But, you know, this whole idea that capitalism is evil, that everything needs to be framed in terms of dialectical conflict. And I mean, it's just incredible how the ideology that animates the Communist Chinese Party has now become so dominant in our education system in the United States.
They are using the same methods. That's the idea. And I always say that if you want to beat them, you have to use the same methods that they're doing, because the people that we are working with now are educated in a one way to do something. And when you try to deviate from that plan, it doesn't work. I believe that's why President Trump is so successful, because he talks in their language and the people who are listening to him can absorb what he's saying, can understand what he's saying. It's so important that we, I believe, follow their plans and just change the outcome, because everything that they do is outcome-based. Outcome-based means they know the end that they want, and they will just fit the method into that, coming up with that conclusion. Well, we can do the same thing. And I also believe that the taking of God really represented the taking of morality out of our school. And as I say many times, success can be good or evil, and the only thing that makes the difference is the moral fiber of the individual. So by removing God, they have removed morality and opened the door to horrific things that they have been instructing our kids with regard to sexualizing our children and perverting them and confusing them. Would you agree with that, Alex?
100%. And, you know, the attack on God was at first so subtle, but it was so clever. You know, John Dewey absolutely rejected God. He was one of the co-authors of the first Humanist Manifesto. He was always very open about the fact that he rejected God. The very first plank of his Humanist Manifesto is that we believe the universe is self-existing and not created. So they told us right from the beginning where they were going with this. And, you know, they viewed God as kind of an inconvenience. But think about the implications of that, okay? If God is the author of moral laws, and he is, what happens if you remove God from the picture? Well, suddenly you don't have moral laws anymore. And this clearly applies in the realm of sexuality, right? God ordained sexual morality. He did not want us, like Marx, right? Marx believed that women should be held in common and that, you know, they could just rotate among the men of the communist commune. But God said no. Men and women are designed to live in a lifelong relationship called marriage, and in this relationship they can produce new life and they can raise up children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. This was all very clear. And when they eliminated that, and that was made official in 1962, 1963, with those Supreme Court rulings, they took out prayer first in 1962, and it was not a sectarian prayer. In fact, it was developed by Jews, Catholics, and Protestants all together. Very non-sectarian prayer, just acknowledging God and requesting his blessings. When you look at the consequences of that, you see that is, I think, the moment of our steepest decline, and it just happened so quickly. And there's so much more to this, too, Karen, aside from taking out morality, which is crucial, right? You can't get people to serve as concentration camp guards. You can't get people to believe in the wholesale mass extermination of unborn babies. You can't get people to believe in all these various evils that have infected our society without eliminating morality and the source of morality. It also is a fundamental attack on our freedoms, and we're starting to see that now. And if you believe that there is no God, and that takes a huge amount of faith. I mean, I don't have anywhere close to that much faith. I'm sorry. I don't know how you could believe that nothing created everything. But if you believe that, then what our founding fathers said is not true. Our founding fathers said it was a self-evident truth that God created us, that he made us equal, and that he endowed each of us with inalienable rights, like the right to life, like the right to property. And this is very clear. You don't have to read the scriptures to realize that God gave you a right to life. He said, thou shalt not murder, and made it very explicit, but you don't have to read the scriptures to know that. You don't have to read the scriptures to know that you have a right to property. It's just common sense. Yeah, God said, thou shalt not steal, so of course, God prescribes private property rights, but you don't have to read your Bible to understand that, right? It's just common sense that if I go out in the forest and spend a day picking berries, that those are my berries, and they're not your berries unless I choose to give them to you, okay? And yet, when you eliminate God, you eliminate the basis for morality and also for our individual rights. And then you become, as the people of the Soviet Union, China, Cuba, Vietnam, North Korea, etc., you become slaves.
Yes, you become susceptible to anything that you can grasp onto, because that's what people want to do. They want to be recognized. They want to be noticed. They want to do something. It doesn't matter who the person is. Every individual wants to be an individual. And when you eliminate God and you give them nothing and you give them nothing to hope for and you take away their rights and you take away their freedoms, we have a group of kids that now are so incredibly confused. And their answer to being individuals is how many times, where else can I pierce myself? What other tattoo can I put on myself that will make me stand out and be different? Because that's what everybody really seeks. That's the human nature. You want to stand out. You want to do something. You want to be different, no matter what it is. And you want recognition of something that you have done. But if you have done nothing, what a depressing life. And that is really the basis of communism. You as an individual have done nothing. You are only as good as the group that you belong to. And right now, the groups that we have in school have nothing to do with education. When we're teaching our children to have sex as early as grade 4 or as early as 4 years old, and we're teaching them how to have sex, and that sex is just there to pleasure yourself, not to have a relationship, not to have a family, not to have responsibility. And this is what's being taught in our schools. Where is this leading to, Alex?
I think it is leading us to a very, very dark and dangerous place. And I think that's it really needs to be clear to everybody. The totalitarians who have engineered this had very specific objectives in mind. Let's just take John Dewey as an obvious example. Again, he's universally acknowledged as the founding father of our progressive public school system. You can ask anybody in this country with a degree in education from a four-year college, they will tell you, yes, John Dewey is the founding father of our public school system. And, you know, in fairness, I think Robert Owen and also Horace Mann deserve some of the blame, but you know, let's give it to him. Let's say John Dewey is the man. So what did John Dewey believe? Well, he told us. He went to the Soviet Union, right? One of the most murderous regimes to have ever existed on this planet. And he wrote back about how wonderful it was, okay? He wrote a whole series of articles in the New Republic extolling the virtues of the Soviet Union. Well, what did the Soviet Union do? They eliminated God, and then they proceeded to eliminate tens of millions of human beings. They ruthlessly persecuted religious people, especially Jews and Christians and also Muslims. What else did they do? They engineered famines. There were shortages of everything. They became a barbarous society unlike anything we had seen in history. It was the most ruthless totalitarianism that had ever existed. And I mean, it was just in your face. Unbelievable how wicked it became. And as crazy as it sounds, that is the direction that we're heading in. People don't realize the parallels and the correlation because they're not being told in the fake media. And even, you know, Fox News and the Wall Street Journal aren't exactly making it clear. But this is the direction we're heading. When you eliminate God, when you eliminate morality, when you dumb down a society, when you eliminate God-given rights, when you eliminate checks and balances, when you turn people into hateful individuals with no sense of right and wrong, other than, you know, whatever their feelings dictate, you have created a recipe for absolute disaster, for tyranny, for brutality, for barbarism, and that's the direction we're heading unless we get this turned around, Karen.
I could not agree more. And some of the programs that are being taught in school, it's amazing that these kids even can feel that they can go forward and have any kind of career or job or relationship, because all they're being taught are things that are endless. There's no solution. You can't control climate change. So therefore, that's what communists do. They pick a program that has no solution, and then basically they turn around and tell us, well, if they had more time and more money, then they would be able to find the solution, and therefore you should reelect them. And in the meantime, as President Trump pointed out, you get a person like Biden, who's been in office for 47 years, saying the same thing over and over again every year just to get reelected with no solution in sight. There is no solution to any of their programs. And the sustainability goals are the most insane. Just think about what Biden said. He wanted to rid the world of fossil fuel because it is a pollutant. Well, obviously, he hasn't explored the fossil fuel industry in the last 20 years because they have become one of the cleanest industries in our world today. And unfortunately, that never gets known. But think of the world, what it would be like if we no longer had oil and petroleum to create the products that we use. And yet our children are going out into these sustainable programs learning nothing. What do you think of the sustainability development programs that we have?
Yeah, I have a lot of experience with these, Karen. I've been going to these UN conferences for well over a decade now. They're global warming summits. I went down to the UN Conference on Sustainable Development in Rio de Janeiro in 2012. That was on the 20th anniversary of the signing of Agenda 21. And very clearly, I mean, you don't have to speculate about this, very clearly, their objective is a totalitarian world government. And you mentioned something very important, this war on fossil fuels. The war on fossil fuels, first of all, is based on a complete and total fraud. Right, they're telling us that carbon dioxide is a dangerous toxic pollution that's going to kill the planet if we don't allow the UN to tax and regulate it. That is absolutely, positively absurd. That's why they had to eliminate the teaching of the scientific method under the national science standards called the Next Generation Science Standards, brought to you by the same people who brought you Common Core. You'll study science for literally 12 years, and I put science in air quotes, and yet you will never hear the term scientific method unless you have a rogue teacher who deviates from the national standards. There's a very deliberate reason for that. That's because if children understood the scientific method, if they understood reasoning, if they understood even the basics of chemistry and earth science and the atmosphere, they would know that not only is carbon dioxide not a pollution, it is an essential gas. In fact, it's the gas of life. Every time you exhale, you're breathing out carbon dioxide. Every time a plant engages in photosynthesis, it is using carbon dioxide. And I've done a lot of interviews with some of the world's top experts on this. In fact, I interviewed Trump's climate advisor for years, Dr. William Happer. He's a Princeton physics professor. Wonderful, wonderful man. And what he said was very clear. The Earth is starving for more CO2. He said the plants on this planet are just desperate for more carbon dioxide. They need more carbon dioxide in massive quantities. That's why farmers pump it into their greenhouses. It is absolutely essential, and plants do much better when they have a higher concentration, 3 to 4 times the concentration that we have today. And yet our children are being told that carbon dioxide is toxic pollution. It's absurd. They're also being told that the sea levels are rising. Another total fraud. I interviewed the UN's own editor of their sea level section for the UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, Dr. Nils Oxen-Morner. You can find this interview online before YouTube takes it down. What he said was crystal clear. Anyone who even talks about global sea level proves that they don't know what they're talking about. There is no such thing as global sea level. Sometimes sea levels are rising in one area and declining in another area. Okay, so he said right off the bat, it's fake. Second of all, he said the idea that sea levels are going to rise globally due to alleged man-made global warming is completely fraudulent. He said, if anything, they're going to go down in the years ahead. And this is the guy that the UN chose to lead its section on sea level in the UN IPCC report. He told them it was all wrong, and they proceeded to publish the garbage anyway. And so he had to resign his position. But, you know, just let that sink in. And if you really want to understand sustainable development and sustainability, just recognize it means tyranny, oppression, the total overturning of all standards of morality that we know, right? And I tell people the simplest way to understand it is just take the morality that God has outlined in the Bible and flip it 100% upside down. So, you know, God ordained that there should be private property. These people openly want to eliminate private property. And they're telling us to our face now. The World Economic Forum is telling us in the future we're not going to own anything, nothing, not a house, not a piece of land to grow a blade of grass on, nothing. Okay, that's what they are telling us. You know, God created the male and female. You don't have to be a Bible scholar to recognize that. You can use your eyes. You can look at biology and you can say, oh, yeah, right, they're created male and female. Well, now they teach the kids that that's bigotry and that's evil and that it's unsustainable. The nuclear family is being targeted, right? The concept of the nation state is being targeted as part of this drive to sustainable development. And it all goes back, Karen, to education, right, which is what we started our conversation with. If you go to chapter 36 in Agenda 21, they tell you right there, education is indispensable, is the term they use for bringing about the changes in attitudes, values, and beliefs that are necessary to bring about the sustainable world order. You go to Agenda 2030, which was signed in 2015 by Obama and the Pope and every other government leader on the planet, and they said, again, openly, Section 4, right? Goal number 4 deals exclusively with education. Everybody on this planet needs to be so indoctrinated that they will promote sustainable development. So that's where they're going with this. It's tyranny on a global scale, and brainwashing the children is the way they hope to bring it about.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, healthycell.com/sleep.
And folks, when you are talking to people of this belief, don't try to make a bold statement to them because they will go right in their little, stick their head in the sand and not talk to you. What you have to do is ask them questions. And I happened to do that. I saw a report where, like Alex was saying, they were talking about the sea levels rising. And it came out of one of the universities. So I called the author of the report. He was kind enough to send me back. And I said, in your report, you said, in recorded time. Okay, so I wanted to know how long was that recorded time. I said, can you tell me what the sea level was 150 years ago? And he said, no. And I said, well, why can't you? And he said, well, our records don't go back this far. So I said, okay, well, how far back do they go? Oh, we're talking about maybe 100 years. So I said, and how old is the Earth? 4 billion years old, and we're talking about a segment that is 100 years. I said, that's not even a thimble of the ocean of what you're doing. So by you saying in recorded time and not putting a number to it, your recorded time doesn't mean anything because it's a blip in the history of the Earth. And he was forced to admit that, but he didn't change anything that he wrote. So what we have to do is ask them questions. We have to continually question them and make them answer to the things that they're saying. Because sustainability, the raw definition of what sustainable development really is that you are not supposed to use any resource that could be used up. Well, it's highly unlikely that we would ever use up our resources, because even fossil fuel, they are continually being made by decaying matter. So we're not about to use it up. But what they're saying is you, the individual today, has to do more for less of a reward because you can't use up anything that you think a future generation might need. Well, how do you learn? How do you invent? How do you create something new, something different? You can't. And that's really their goal. And also what Alex was saying about the CO2, why is CO2 so important? Yes, for plants, but what are plants? Plants are our food. How do you create a famine? Eliminate the food. Well, if we're eliminating our plants, we're certainly eliminating our food. And then we're teaching our kids that there are too many people on the planet. It's overpopulated. And therefore, relationships shouldn't make any difference. Why be in a relationship, have a family, have children, when you can just have sex, because that's what all families are good for anyway? Where do we go from here, Alex? What can we do?
Yeah, we're in quite a pickle right now as Americans and as human beings. You know, the entire world right now is in convulsions, and the totalitarians are making massive gains. They're using this coronavirus as basically a pretext to steal our freedoms and to build global governance. And I think the only way out of this over the long term, other than maybe divine intervention, which is possible, but you know, I wouldn't count on it, is education. If we don't educate our children properly, if we don't educate our families, so, you know, just starting at the most basic level, right? Our children and our own families, and then spreading outwards from there, our communities, our neighborhoods, our streets, our blocks, our cities, our states, there is going to be no way to get out of this. And that's how simple it is. Now, the other side, the globalists, the totalitarians, they have a very clear agenda, a very clear objective. They call it the New World Order. George Soros, one of the architects, one of the financiers of this abomination, has said very clearly that he believes communist China needs to own the New World Order. They said he said that communist China has a better functioning government than the United States. Their objective, I think very clearly, is a global system based on the model of communist China. Totalitarianism, but maybe a little bit more gentle than it was in the past, right? You see, the social credit system is now one of their primary social control mechanisms, so they don't necessarily have to torture everybody who defies them. They just keep everybody in line using the social credit system because they know that, hey, if I have a friend who doesn't agree with the Communist Party, if I say something that goes against the Communist Party, my life will be ruined. I won't be able to get an education. I won't be able to go to school. I won't be able to get on an airplane. I won't be able to travel to another country. So everybody kind of falls in line. Now, that is their objective, I think, for the whole planet. And if we want to stop that, we have got to be very diligent in working on this. It didn't happen overnight. It's not going to get fixed overnight. And I think in the near term, we may be seeing some very serious turbulence in terms of political convulsions in this country with the election coming up, in terms of increasing unrest. You know, we've already seen a lot of our Democrat cities and even some of our Democrat states go up in flames with these riots where nobody gets prosecuted. So it's going to take a massive operation. And what I think, Karen, is that you know, we need to look back at what Sun Tzu said. Sun Tzu was a brilliant Chinese military strategist from thousands of years ago, and what he taught has many applications to this day. And in The Art of War, he explained that if you don't know yourself and you don't know your enemy, you're done. You're going to lose every single battle. And that's where Americans are right now. They don't know who they are, right? We don't know our history. We don't know our Constitution. We don't know our Declaration of Independence. We don't know, you know, really anything about what America is. And then as far as knowing the enemy, that's crucial as well. And unfortunately, your average American is clueless. You know, they think the enemy is the other political party or, you know, somebody they don't like or, you know, Trump or something like that. And no, that means you have a fundamental misunderstanding of who the enemy is. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this new book on the deep state, is because I want to shine the light on who is the enemy. How does the enemy work? What is their objective? And what can we do to stop them? And so I think that's going to be just absolutely crucial, Karen. If we want to fight back against this, we have got to rekindle an understanding of who we are as Americans. And we've also got to increase awareness of who the enemy is. Who are the totalitarians who want to steal our freedom, destroy our civilization, and build this totalitarian global system? We need to identify them. We need to put names on them, right? The Rockefellers of the world, the Bill Gateses of the world, the George Soroses of the world. They need to be exposed. They need to be opposed. And they need to be, if they've committed crimes, they need to be held accountable for their crimes.
Absolutely. And one of the things that you can do that I am strongly in favor of is to get your kids out of those government indoctrination clinics.
Amen.
And I know, Alex, that you homeschool your family, your children. Can you tell everyone a little bit so that they aren't nervous about homeschooling their children? Because that's what I hear from people most of the time. How do I know I'm smart enough to do this?
Yep. It's, you know, I tell people it's the second best decision I ever made in my life, right? The first one was to put all my faith and trust in God. The second one was to faithfully follow his commands as outlined in the Bible when it comes to the education of children. I tell people it's incredibly fun. Okay, I mean, homeschooling has just been an incredible adventure for our family. We have had a blast doing it. In addition, it's very effective. You know, there's a lot of data on this out there now. So parents, if you're concerned, go to the National Home Education Research Institute. It's NHERI.org. You can find them online. And they've collected data on this for decades. And what it shows is that parents will almost always do a better job than the government schools. They'll do it even if they don't have any kind of high school diploma, right? And I tell people half joking, you could like put your kids in a closet for 12 years. They'd probably be better off than spending 12 years in a government indoctrination center. But I can tell you, homeschooling is a lot of fun. It's incredibly effective. The average homeschooler is just running circles around the victims of government schools. And the great thing right now, Karen, now is the time to do it. The homeschool population in the United States has doubled just in the last 6 months, just since this coronavirus pandemic happened. It's gone from 5% of home of families with school-aged children to 10% of families with school-aged children. Incredibly encouraging news. If we could double that and then double that again, we would be in really good shape as a nation. Yes, it takes a sacrifice. You know, yes, I know that means one parent has got to stay at home, and that means, you know, living on one income. But you know what? We're the richest society that's ever existed in human history. If our ancestors 3,000 years ago, goat herders and farmers could homeschool their kids, how in the world can we, as the richest people on the planet, not homeschool our children, not afford to homeschool our children? And I also tell parents, you can't afford not to homeschool your children, right? Look at what these kids coming out of the public schools are doing. Look what they're thinking. They're turning to drugs. They're turning to abortions. They're burning down their cities. They're getting arrested. Is that what you want for your family? Because if you look at the data, that's where it will head. And I tell parents, homeschooling is amazing. If you can't, for whatever reason, you know, I know there are some families who literally can't. There are good private schools out there. We just started a new ministry called Public School Exit. You can find us at publicschoolexit.com. We're there to help people get their children out of the public schools. Anything we can do to help, we will try. And we're setting up a scholarship fund now to help really low-income families who need support. But, it's so essential, not only for your children, but also for your family and for your country and for your freedoms, to get them out of the indoctrination centers.
Oh, that is fabulous. And folks, you don't have to think that you have to sit in front of a computer screen for 6 hours a day just because your kid was in school for 6 hours. The majority of instruction time, I believe, is not learned in front of a computer. It's learned through experience. And what is better than being able to take your children in the outside world and teach them how to live in this world that they're going to be facing? Alex, are there groups where people could get together, do you think, in different communities where they can work with other people that are homeschooling if they have a problem, get clues?
Absolutely. And I tell people, even if you live in a small town, there's almost certainly going to be one or more homeschool co-ops. I live in a small town, and we've got, that I know of, 5 or 6 homeschool co-ops. We participate in 2 or 3 of them, depending on the year. And, you know, they're everywhere. The homeschooling now has become a huge mainstream movement. There's structured options for parents who want that. There's unstructured options for parents who want that. There's some that focus on, classical education. There's some that focus on science. There's, you know, whatever you're looking for, you'll find it, and you'll have the freedom to pursue what you're interested in, what your children are interested in. And really, there's almost no way to do it worse than the government school system. The government schools were designed to handicap and destroy and indoctrinate your children. It would be really hard to do worse than that. And so, connect with the local people in your community who are already doing this. A lot of them are faith-based. Many of them are not faith-based. So find out what's in your community. Meet the local homeschool leaders. Every state now has got a major homeschool association. In Florida, we have the Parent Educators Association or the Florida Parent Educators Association, FPEA, wonderful organization. And every state has a group like this, so no matter where you are, you can connect with them, and they can point you in the right direction. They can tell you what's going on in your community. Connect with. And there's national groups too, like the Classical Conversations. They've got co-ops all over the country, but they're all based on this national classical program. I work with the Freedom Project Academy. I teach economics there. It's an international private online school. We partner with parents, so it's kind of like a private school, homeschool hybrid. There's just so many great options out there for parents, and I encourage you to connect with the local people in your community who are doing it. They'll give you confidence. They'll show you where you can find the resources that you need. It's just, I can't recommend it highly enough.
Well, and I could not agree more. And please, folks, do not be confused, or do not think that politician that is telling you the reason why our school is not doing well is because we need more money. money is not the answer. That is absolutely wrong. I think in America we spend the highest amount of money on educating our children, and today 47% of them can't read, write, and do simple math. If you want to see what's going on in your state, then where should they go to look up statistics on their state, Alex?
Yeah, so the best place for homeschool statistics that I've found is the National Home Education Research Association. It's a nonprofit group based in Oregon, and they've got national data, they've got state data. So anything you want to find out about the homeschooling statistics, you'll find there. You'll also find the research on socialization. You know, everybody, oh, what about socialization? Don't worry, they've got that covered too. And what they found is that students who've been homeschooled are much better socialized on every metric that we can track and monitor than victims of government schools. And, you know, if you're just starting from scratch, you say, hey, I've decided I want to homeschool. What do I do? Just go to duckduckgo.com, type in the name of your town, and type in homeschool co-op, type in the name of your state, look up homeschool association. You'll find everything that you need. Again, you can go to publicschoolexit.com. If you want to get that special report that I mentioned in the New American Magazine called Rescuing Our Children, you can go to thenewamerican.com/rescuingourchildren. We've got lots of tips and ideas in there. And you know, I just, again, do some research. It does take time. You got to plan. You got to decide how you're going to do it. But it just opens up endless possibilities. And I can guarantee you your children will be better educated, happier, and much better socialized than if you put them into a government brainwash or a daycare center. So.
Absolutely, because nothing is better than life experiences, and nothing is better than life experiences with your family, because those are the people that care about you and love you. As a teacher, I can tell you I loved all my kids for that year, and then the next year they moved on. And although I hoped that I had some kind of influence on them, they didn't come back to see me, but they did go home and spend time with their family. So learning through your family is a learning experience, not just for your children, it's for yourself as well. And it is so important. And if you are unsure of what your government school is doing with your kids, then I would suggest that you go to NAEP online and look up your state. You can find your school and you can do a comparison between what your school has done in your state. And I hate to tell you folks, you will be shocked. It is horrifying when you see that, like in Florida, we have schools that have an A average and the kids are reading less than 50%. I cannot figure that out, but yes, I can, because they don't know math anyway. So, Alex, I want to thank you so much. Please tell everyone again where they can find you, your book, and folks, our children are our future. And if we believe that, it's up to us. No matter what happens with this election, we have to turn our sights locally. If you can, run for school board. If you can't, the least you can do is homeschool your kids. And if you're a grandparent, you certainly have a wealth of information that you can share with your grandchildren. I was talking to a grandmother the other day, and she told me that she has five grandchildren, and they're all over the country, and she is homeschooling them on Skype. And she said it is the best experience that she has ever had. Not only are they getting to know their cousins, but it is creating a bond within the family that she felt can never be broken. There are things we can do. We are not sitting in a time where we can say, I'm one person, I don't know what I can do. There are many alternatives, and Alex is available. His information is available. Please, folks, it is so important that we pay attention to our children. Thank you, Alex. It has been a pleasure as always, and I will call on you again because I would love to hear all about the things that are in your book regarding the deep state, because we are seeing more and more of that coming out every single day. And I believe President Trump was right when he said he didn't know how bad the swamp was until he was delving in it. So thank you, folks. Thank you all for joining me today. I hope you have a wonderful week. This is Karen Schoen with the Prism of America's Education, and we will see you again next week.
But I'll always stand proud and free. I'm America, don't tread on me. I'm America, yes, sir.